It was cold outside of the car, unusually cold. One of those days that resembles every quality of winter time, apart from the snow and ice. Lauren was having a rather difficult time finding a place to park her 2001 silver Honda CR-V along the streets of Aspen, Colorado, despite the fact that the town has a mere population of 7,000 year-round residents. We ended up parking several blocks away from our destination. Walking through the cool, crisp air, we made our way to the Aspen Art Museum with the intention of deciphering meaning in contemporary works of art. My name is Danny Naum.
And my name is Lauren Kenyon.
And we are investigating how meaning manifests itself through different art forms, artists, and their creative processes.
We wanted to start our experiment regarding meaning in art with what we thought would be most difficult, abstract art, the kind that many view as scribbles, blobs, or say something along the lines of, "I could do that," when looking at it.
This type of art has always intrigued me. About 2 years ago, I took an abstract painting class. It really opened my eyes. I developed a special interest in Joan Mitchell's finger paintings and began to try to emulate her style within my own work. I would spread out large pieces of paper on my dorm room floor, dip my hands in paint, and experiment for hours with different color combinations and compositions. I could get so caught up in the process that only after I finished would I notice the blotches of paint I had managed to spread all over the floor. This was the first time I felt myself enjoying art. It was not controlled, there were absolutely no rules or expectations, and it represented pure, unbounded expression. However, I always felt that my pieces lacked any sort of meaning, which I viewed as a major problem. It made me feel as if my work was superficial or somehow less valid than others. The truth is that it's hard for me to approach art by thinking about what it means beforehand, since oftentimes I don't even have a set idea of what it is I'm going to make until it is already on the paper. I've tried to come up with meaning after the fact, but it always feels artificial. How abstract artists go about assigning meaning to their work in a way that is authentic is a mystery to me, and I hoped that this exploration would provide me with some insight on how others do it, so maybe I could find a way that works for me.
Analyzing modern art is hard. Lots of times, it is difficult to draw a connection between conceptual ideas and visuals. It was especially difficult for Danny and I at the Aspen Art Museum, since we decided to deny ourselves the luxury of reading the nicely printed pamphlets or asking the woman stationed in the room any clarifying questions. We were going to try to come up with some sort of derived meaning from our own observations. But before venturing into the museum, Danny and I took our handheld Zoom recorder to the streets of Carbondale, Colorado, with the intent of learning how to view art in a way that leads to discovering meaningful takeaways.
We happened to bump into Brian Colley, a Carbondale-based illustrator, painter, and printmaker, on our search for answers. One of my personal favorite works by him is a watercolor of Carbondale's local and only grocery store, City Market. This painting vividly depicts the red metal roof of the supermarket and the slanted parking lot. Every person who lives in this town can look at this painting and recognize its exact location. The only difference is that there is a giant T-Rex standing in front of the main windows, pushing a contrastingly small shopping cart full of vegetables. The reason I like this piece is because it is an ironic take on something I see every day. Similar to his work, Brian holds a light and imaginative perspective, and he happily shared his personal experience with presenting meaning to an audience to us.
I do painting and printmaking mostly. I have a studio over at Saw in Carbondale. Sometimes I try and think of things in my life or in the world around us and think of something relevant that I want to address in my art, sometimes with meaning, sometimes with personal meaning. I mean, depending on the show, they'll ask for an artist statement. Sometimes that comes through in my titles, kind of a hint at to what it might mean. But I also learned in art school that you're not always going to be there to represent your work, and so it needs to stand on its own no matter what, and people may or may not get the meaning. So it's really up to them, and all you can do is make the art.
Brian brought to our attention that many times, even if an artist has an intended meaning, it can become lost by the time it reaches an audience. This would mean that many exhibits exist without sufficient explanation or support of the meaning behind them, but they still manage to be successful, as people will gather from it what they want.
So we believe that it would be necessary in our experiment to find what we personally could derive from the art presented at the exhibit, without the help of the explanations presented by the museum or even the artists themselves. We hope to reach a sort of conclusion that remained relevant and authentic to us as individuals, even if it was not exactly what the artist had in mind. C'est le temps de l'amour, le temps des copains et de l'aventure. Quand le temps va et vient, on ne pense à rien malgré ses blessures.
The exhibit that stood out to us the most at the museum was titled Girls Times Veils by artist Cheryl Donegan. The first thing you notice upon entering are the seven mannequins placed in an arc in the center of the room. A metallic black color, the mannequins are contrasted by intricately patterned fabric dresses, which drape all seven of them. This metallic color scheme is somewhat consistent through the rest of the exhibit. Bright colored images made mainly as a result of the artist dyeing cotton fabric hung on all four walls of the large square room. A couple tall rectangular banners made of white cotton fabric with pieces of pink and blue gingham fabric sewed onto them hung from the walls and folded out onto the ground as well, bridging the gap between wall and floor.
This checkered pattern was noticeably repeated within the exhibit. Some of the larger prints placed on the back wall diverged from the mostly pattern and shape-oriented pieces on the other walls, as upon closer look, Lorne and I noticed that they were cut up and turned around prints of different brands of vintage sportswear clothing, mainly jackets. In a separate corner from the square area was a video installation featuring images of models walking up and down a runway projected on the back of a green vintage ski jacket.
The exhibit expressed freedom and confidence through the artistic courage of doing something different. I have always been drawn to weird art. The most different art I had ever seen, if you could even call it that, was an exhibit that featured quarters with their centers punched out, and in this hole were cow brains set in clear resin. About 50 of them were placed in the center of the room, just sitting there on the floor. This was such a weird thing for me to hold in my hand, and being only 7, I was probably attracted to it because it wasn't one of those boring paintings on the wall. The fact that I can so distinctly remember holding these pieces of art in my hand today demonstrates the power of this weird new art. Amy Kimberly, founder of the Carbondale Creative District and the mind behind Mountain Fair, an event that allows various artists to showcase their work in the hot late August sun, expressed how important this idea of newness is when determining what to display at her local art venue, the Launchpad.
It depends on the medium and if it's something we have a lot of or something that will be unique. It's the strength of the idea behind the art. So if it touches on something that really connects with people or the community, that might be something that might sway me. Or if it's something that we've never seen here before and is so amazing, that too would sway me. A year ago, we had an installation that was a glass house made from all old pieces of glass that this woman had found in a historic site in Aspen where she used to walk her dog. And she constructed the house that she envisioned used to be there back in the old day. And it was in the gallery. And it was so phenomenal to just walk in and feel it. And then they found a picture of the historic house. And it was almost the same one that she had envisioned in the same style. But ours was made all of little glass pieces.
Back at the museum, we noticed that Cheryl Donegan's work mirrored much of what Amy spoke to. It was exactly what we were looking for. After walking around the exhibit for about half an hour, we went up to the roof of the museum to record our initial impressions of it. It had something to do with consumerism, I guess, because a lot of her prints, like, she had prints of, like, vintage, like, jackets, and a lot of her, larger prints, like, were mainly just patterns and weren't clear images, but I feel like it's still kind of all tied into this idea of like clothing.
After we felt we had a handle on what her work meant to us, we wanted to take this a step further and see what Cheryl herself had to say about her installation. A resident of New York, the only way we could reach her was over the phone.
Oh, you have the wrong number, I think.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Please try again later.
La persona que usted ha llamado no está disponible en este momento.
After some failed attempts, we finally got a hold of Cheryl, and she eagerly and passionately told us all she could about her work.
In this case, I worked with the curator, Heidi Zuckerman, and she had intentions and goals too. In that way, it was really fun because it was a collaboration. I obviously made all that work, but Heidi really had a big hand in choosing it. And what was really nice for me was, you know, speaking about meaning, it's really nice to see as an artist how someone else views your work, like the connections they make. Because I think that meaning, even for someone who makes something, meaning can be like a gift. You exchange the meaning back and forth, more of like a gift than sort of a like absolute thing. So Heidi's gift to me was that she could look at my work and find a way, you know, to view it and make selections that told a story that made sense to her. And then it was kind of a fresh take for me on myself. And I think for her, the way I took it, was she saw a lot of meaning across, you know, 10 years of work that had to do with different kind of surfaces, the surfaces that are in the decorative, the side of life, you know, that's involved with design and decoration, also pattern and symbols in painting, and then how those two things kind of combine in the way we express ourselves with clothes. And she was kind of picking out things where those areas were overlapping. And they overlap a lot, I think, in my various bodies of work because I use clothes as both wearable clothing and also there's images of clothing. Some of the patterns that I use are used in clothing, but they're also used in decoration and design. And so I feel like it sort of moves to those two things the way, you know, you move in the world. Like you're in a place, you're wearing a certain thing, just being in the world. So these are all the kind of surfaces that are surrounding us or near us or on us. You know, as an artist, I think I'm playing with those different surfaces.
Hearing the logic that went behind Cheryl's exhibit, although I picked up on some of it, left me feeling incredibly closed-minded. I felt like I missed the whole point because I wasn't really viewing it from my own eyes, but rather how I thought it should be viewed. The meanings she expressed to us remained scattered, complex, and ambiguous. Yet there I was trying to pin it down, or come to an exact answer, like some sort of math problem.
Cheryl mentioned this idea of meaning as a gift, while she also shared with us the relationship between meaning and different surfaces within a particular exhibit. Her perspective was refreshing, and both Danny and I agreed that many of her ideas remained completely new to us.
Wanting to know more about individual artists' relationship with meaning, I decided to call up my mom, an oil painter based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Her paintings are mostly based on people or landscapes. However, she has established a distinct style, something I think many artists struggle to find. Through the use of heavy brush strokes that border on impressionism and a muted, earthy color scheme, her paintings have become easily recognizable to me. She paints things that are important to her, things that exist within her own life. She has painted many pieces of me and my siblings, my favorite being a whole series of me as a little girl, asleep in various places around the house, as I have the tendency to fall asleep in virtually any situation. Some of her most powerful works, however, have been reinvented images that my dad, a physician, has taken with a camera during his travels to different hospitals around the world. I couldn't seem to understand why my mom didn't just paint pretty pictures. One day, after my older siblings had gone off to school, we were watching television in her bedroom, and I switched the channel until I saw Bob Ross painting some dreamy landscape with luminous clouds on the small screen. I remember saying something along the lines of, "Mom, you should paint something like that." She made me switch the channel after that, probably offended, and because she said she didn't like that guy. I would later come to understand that this was due to the insurmountable value she places on the meaning that exists behind her work. Unlike me, meaning comes first for her. It is equally, if not more, important than the images themselves. Upon reflection, I can see how she wouldn't appreciate the works of someone like Bob Ross. When she's not in painting clothes, my mom has worn essentially the same outfit for my entire life. Jeans, sneakers, and a gray or black t-shirt. She doesn't like to stand out. Being too modest for her own good, she really did not like the idea of being interviewed.
Will you promise me that you'll edit this so that if I say something stupid, you won't put it in there?
Yeah.
Despite her shyness, we encouraged her to speak more about her creative process and the role meaning plays within her work.
It was a two-part painting, and it was about packaged meat, and the two different sides, they paralleled each other, but they didn't actually visually match each other. And what I did is I had several different packages of wrapped up store-bought meat, like chicken and ribs and a roast and that kind of thing. And on one side, I did like a highly rendered representation of each of those packages all arranged in the space. And then on the other side, the other painting was the same images but mixed up in order, and they were all x-ray images of what, you know, the actual meat would have looked like through an x-ray. Symbolically, it had a lot of different layers to it. So I had been doing a series of paintings that all had to do with identity and what makes a person's identity and the differences between the interior and the exterior of a person. So when I started thinking about it and I was trying to find ways to visually express this idea of maybe mass production or conformity or the way we present ourselves on the exterior versus what is lying underneath, somehow or another, the idea of packaged meats came up. It was after I'd done another painting about a grocery store. And so when I did that, you know, just those words in and of themselves, packaged meats, kind of took on a lot of different meanings for me. And then I started to get kind of curious about, if this is what something looks like on the outside, what does this look on the inside? And how can I represent that? And so it was really kind of crazy and strange, but I convinced Steve to let me go into his office after hours, and we asked one of the x-ray technicians if she would let me take these packages, you know, of chicken and everything and actually take an x-ray of them. And so I got the images of what they really looked like, and it turned out to be really kind of spooky, and you know, they were just fascinating what they looked like and what they suggested. They started to suggest like really human forms when I looked at them. And so then that started to take on a whole different set of meanings for me, even kind of like my feelings about meat and eating it and how it kind of bothers my conscience in some ways. And, you know, so it actually then just took on a lot of different layers for me.
Something I found interesting about my mother's relationship to meaning is how she described it as a fluid entity subject to change over time. Not only did she accept this fact, but she encouraged it.
Our next outing involved attending a life drawing class at the Heliox Center in Carbondale. If you aren't already aware of what a life drawing class looks like, it usually consists of a bunch of people sitting around a nude model whose job is to hold various poses intended to imitate lifelike situations. We originally planned on going the week before. However, in an email correspondence with the class organizer, Stacy, she informed us that it was going to be a male model with full frontal nudity, and that we might have a better time waiting for a week when a female model was present. Danny and I fully agreed that the female body would be more interesting and suitable to draw.
The reason we decided to attend this class was to investigate how meaning manifests itself in purely realistic art, the kind of art that involves observing what one sees and trying to replicate that.
Even though the style of art isn't necessarily Danny and I's favorite, we acknowledge that many others feel a deep connection to it, and hoped, by the end, to develop more of a sense of appreciation towards it ourselves.
In the beginning of our project, we asked many people around town what they connect to or notice the most when viewing visual art, with the naive idea that it would result in a radical discovery. Many people said something along the lines of,
"How it makes me feel."
But one couple in particular, whose brunch we interrupted to ask this question, came up with very interesting and specific responses. Although for different reasons, both of their answers articulate why they love art that features realistic, lifelike renderings of the natural world.
My name is Severin Brown.
My name is Laurie McLean.
You're talking about physical art.
Yeah.
The colors, first of all, for me, the shapes, the, you know, if there's a piece of, if there is a symbolic, maybe an image or something, I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I love country scenes. I love mountains and trees, and I love flowers. I'm into gardens and stuff.
Cool.
I am moved by art that makes me feel something emotional, you know, and it could be anything. I really gravitate towards realistic art, like the, if you can find any of it, the scenes from behind the Iron Curtain. There was a guy that went over to Russia and got all this realism art that they'd been doing for the entire century. It's absolutely stunningly beautiful. Like, the people look like they're breathing and they have emotions, and they were supposed to be doing realism while everyone else was doing abstract in the world, you know. Nobody even knows who they are, and this guy just went over and bought these paintings for like not very much money and brought them over to the U.S. and put them in these shows, and they blew my mind. It was the most moving exhibit I'd ever seen in my life.
Severin Brown described a connection he feels with paintings and mountains or flowers, as both of these things remain important to him. Laurie McLean revealed that her interest in the Russian paintings is not just due to their incredible lifelike qualities, but also the rich context behind them. Made under Russia's strict foreign policy meant to completely cut off contact with the countries who defeated them in World War II, these pieces were isolated from most of the world until after the Cold War. And along with much of the other art made in that location and time period, are just now being recognized. This opened our eyes to the possibilities of meaning as a result of context. We realized that a piece of art is able to soak up different forms of meaning from all sorts of external or situational factors, such as the history of how it came to be in a certain location, who made it, and what situation they were in when it was made, where it is placed, and who it is viewed by. Entering the life drawing class, I did not know what to expect. Opening the door, I was hit with the warmth of the fire and the homey feeling provided by the linen on the floor, the boiling teapot, the art on the walls, and the sound of smooth jazz. I had never been to a life drawing class before, so it was a relief to be immediately relaxed by the atmosphere.
Let me tell you, I was trying to draw hands.
We introduced ourselves, set up our drawing horses, and the 5-minute gesture drawing began. A quick aside, gesture drawing is basically how you warm up when in a figure drawing class. These drawings are meant to be made from very quick gestural movements that focus on the overall position and proportions of the figure.
The two longer poses which made up the bulk of the class were each an hour long. During this time, people were able to focus on the actual details of the figure. It was extremely interesting to witness how every person in the room could come up with an entirely unique interpretation of what was in front of them. Some used pen and drew very neatly and meticulously. Those who used charcoal focused less on the linear aspects of the image and more on value. Regardless, the work of each person's hands showed itself through their drawings.
During one of the 5-minute breaks that separated each 20-minute session, we got the chance to speak with Stacy Dickerson, the friendly white-haired woman who Danny and I had been emailing. Aside from the intriguing portraits Stacy creates during class, she can be found making mostly oil, mixed media, and cold wax paintings of both abstract and realistic interpretations of people and landscapes. One of her pieces titled Beatrice S. Hat, a painted portrait of a selfie that one of her close friends posted on Facebook, received the Valley Visual Arts People's Choice Award in 2017. Stacy is highly involved in the art community of the Roaring Fork Valley and maintains a dedicated attitude towards art and the promotion of it within all of us. Not only did she encourage us to attend the class, but she welcomed our questions and the discussion they provoked.
Actually, the meaning for me comes from making the observations that I can take out into the world and into perhaps other paintings that I work on. And I think what happens for me is that if I get better at communicating what my eye sees to my hand, then what my mind's eye sees, I can also translate to my hand. So that's the practice for me, is to get better at trying to articulate what is more in my heart or soul. However, there are times when you have a good night, you know, and you really connect with your model, and I have some great drawings that seem to have a life to them.
Stacy spoke a little about how the meaning of life drawing for her is developing her observational abilities so that she can use them in other circumstances. This brings us to the idea of the meaning of art being gained in the action of making the art itself. In a conversation amongst some of the other artists, we discussed how gesture drawing borders the kinesthetic approach that artists like Jackson Pollock, the guy who coined the technique of splattering paint by flicking his paintbrush, have taken, which values the movement of your body while producing the art just as much as the product itself.
Which got me thinking, even if the physical process that goes into making art is not as intense as the approach Jackson Pollock utilized, each artist must still undergo a creative process that remains entirely unique and personal to them.
So even if someone makes a piece of art without intentionally assigning meaning to it, or it may seem meaningless to an audience, it gains a sort of inherent meaning during the artist's creative process that remains candidly authentic to them. In other words, meaning may come before or after the art is created, but many times it comes as a result of the process of simply being made by someone. In this case, all art holds the same validity. Meaning or not, a pretty picture or a social commentary, all of these are reflections of how we, as individuals, choose to view the world and share that view with others.
All the art that we make, me, Lauren, my mom, Brian, Stacy, Cheryl, or post-World War II Russian painters, have one thing in common. They are made by humans. Humans who think and feel and experience the world around them in an entirely unique way. Cheryl views meaning in her art as a gift. Brian sees it as something that is left for the audience to figure out. And Susan treats it as an entity subject to change. And as we saw in all of these cases, a piece of art's meaning may become distorted or embellished as a result of time, context, or viewers, so that they, too, can form an equally authentic connection to it. This has been an investigation of meaning in art by Danny Nam
and Lauren Kenyon. Thank you for listening.
And this is KD&K Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. You just heard a podcast from Danny and Lauren, two students at CRMS here, Colorado Rocky Mountain School, on meaning in art. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Danny and Lauren.
Yeah.
So tell us, how did you decide on that topic? You're clearly passionate about art, but what prompted you to do that?
Well, I think we both just really wanted to know more about like meaning in art. And we started out by looking at like what's more important, like aesthetics and visuals or the meaning that goes behind art. But we realized that was kind of limiting to us to like kind of compare those things and see which one is more valuable, because we realized like it there isn't really a right answer. So we kind of opened it up a little bit and just looked at meaning in general.
Yeah, and I think that like our relationship and like we like a lot of the same things, so art is one thing that we can kind of bond over. And it's like really cool to just work with your friend and like investigate something you're both interested in, and learn more about that topic. So, yeah.
Did you learn a great deal?
Yeah, I say we did. Yeah. Yeah.
Were there challenges along the way? Any roadblocks you came up against?
I think because it was so broad and because it wasn't very specific or right or wrong, it kind of was hard for us to stay focused on kind of one thing. So that was kind of difficult, I guess.
Yeah, but we figured it out.
Yeah.
You overcame that. That's true. Yeah. Well, I really enjoyed the various perspectives from people in the community. Is there one voice that you heard or talked with that really stuck out that you gleaned a lot from?
I think that everyone we talked to has a very unique perspective and an important perspective, and they all added to our podcast. I would probably say I was most interested by Cheryl Donegan, because it was just really cool to look at an exhibit and see the art for ourselves and then kind of talk to the artist who made it and just her interpretation of how meaning presents itself differently on different surfaces and how it adds more with different surfaces and different levels. And I just thought that was cool because no one really talks about how different medias and different forms of art imply different meanings. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything you're going to do further with this topic? Now that you've pretty much explored it, going to pursue art after high school?
For me, it's always been just kind of a hobby. I don't know if I would do it as a career, but seeing all these people around the valley that do it as a career and are successful in it and enjoy it has been really inspiring to me. It's made me realize that it is possible to have a career out of art, which I think is really cool.
The artistic community in Carbondale is just so welcoming and, as Danny said, inspiring. And art is something I do for fun or when I'm bored. It's not something serious at this point in my life, but I just think that we live in a really cool place to do art and to be around it. So, I mean, it's something I'll probably think about more.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. We really do have a lot of creatives here in the community. I'm glad you got to explore that.
Yeah, cool.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Danny and Lauren. Is there anything else you want to add before we sign off and go on to the next podcast?
I don't think so. Thank you for listening.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for tuning into the Andy Zenke Youth Empowerment Program and to Danny and Lauren for a wonderful podcast. And now we have Belle and Giselle presenting a podcast on serial criminals and the psychology of serial criminals. Thanks for tuning into Katie and Kay.